don't know why I still like that opening.
I like it a lot.
So, yeah, even all the little mistakes I make in there, still fun. Anyway, Fish and Frank here, and that's Robert in the chair across from me. And we're going to be doing an area fishing report. We do have the last shark tournament coming up, at least the last one for this foreseeable future. And that's going to be happening this Saturday. Sign-outs start at 3:30. You have till we close, which is 9 o'clock. From 3:30 to 9 o'clock to do your sign-outs. You can sign up, get paid, save yourself a little bit of time anytime before that. And we've got lots of chum, bait, mullet. We've got some bonita. We got a bunch of other stuff. We've got everything all packed away into the freezers.
Pretty impressive, too, I'd have to say.
So it's going to be an interesting tournament this time, considering some of the people have been fishing it pretty much most of the 29 years it's been in existence.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I mean, some of those guys, I mean, there was one guy in here yesterday, and he said he's been doing it for 24 years.
And so we're doing something a little different right now. We've got Facebook open and taking comments on Facebook while we work the show. So we just got that posted. We're going to see where that goes. And I guess where do you want to start today, Robert?
Well, let's start out in the Gulf. Let's start somewhere different.
Okay. What's going on in the Gulf?
Well, you got a full moon going for you, which can be good and bad. You know, it's sometimes it works out absolutely phenomenal, and other times it works hardcore against you.
Yeah, full moon, a lot of times the fish tend to feed at night. Now, that's going to be great for the tournament. The guy's going out in the Gulf looking for the sharks. It's perfectly legal to head out in the Gulf. Kevin went out and got a huge black tip the last time, and he missed placing by about a quarter of an inch with it. Because now we're going to measure the sharks from the tip of the nose to the fork of the tail. And they do have to be gutted, iced down, so the meat stays edible. We don't want to waste that much meat. If you kill it, you should eat it.
Absolutely.
Basic rule of life. Don't kill what you're not going to eat. No waste. So, anyway, what's up with the sharks out there?
Personally, if it were me and I was going to be crazy enough to run offshore to go do it, I'd be running out to the very first shrimp boat I find. You know, the bull sharks have been hanging around those shrimp boats pretty heavily, you know, or else I'd be running out to it at first light, first thing in the morning, trying to find one.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to get out there and find one first thing and then get back in time, because the tournament's over Sunday morning, 9 a.m. You already have to be here.
Yeah.
If you figure on getting here at 8, then you won't make a mistake. But the cell phone turns 900, if you're not on the concrete, in line, you know, you're not in the tournament. You have to be already set up. You can't pull up and go, okay, I'm here. And no, nine, it's done.
Nine, it's over.
And we hand out the prizes by 9:15 or so. And by 9:30, everybody gets to go home and get some sleep. So
some of them, it's much needed, too.
Yeah.
But there's been some pretty unbelievable bull sharks hanging out offshore. And I think there's going to be a good number of even more bull sharks going offshore, because they're going to be chasing some of these tarpon out that are going to be moving out with the hill tide that's going on each night. So I think you're going to see a variety of different sharks out
there. So how far out do the tarpon go on that hill tide?
They go anywhere from 10 to as far as 40 miles out.
But they're going to travel out a ways. Figure the channel markers go out how many miles? A couple of miles?
Six.
So the channel markers themselves go out like 6 miles. So you're gonna be going out past that. You'll still be in sight of land, but make sure you have a compass and a GPS.
Right. And the further you go, the more you need to know your sharks. As you hit that 10-mile mark, there's a very realistic chance of getting into a sandbar or a dusky, which are both protected, and they are both tricky to tell the difference between that and a bull shark. So you know that would be my main suggestion for the shark tournament aspect of it. For the guys that want to go snapper fishing, this is the first little spawn where you get the aggregates of snapper that move out onto the reefs. So one reef might be just unbelievably stacked with mangrove snapper or lane snapper or both. Usually the June full moon, July full moon, and the August full moon, pretty much the snappers throughout the world getting these really tight balls over mainly artificial reefs for the most part, and some of the big humps and stuff in the Pacific and the Atlantic, but pardon me. they they go into a serious feeding pattern too, in addition to the spawning, so it's pretty impressive. And the mangroves that the guys have been catching even before all this started, been in the 14 to 16, 18 inch range. A couple guys been going up out of Sarasota and getting some 5, 6, and 7 pound mangroves at some of the reefs like 20, 25 miles out. Unbelievably good size ones.
Okay. Just got a message on Facebook from Chris Foley. And Chris says, snooks all over Englewood Beach. White bucktails are really doing good. And he's really good luck about sunrise and sunset, so early and late. The tarpon have been staying deep, but there are pods in the back, up there on the back side of the island. So
on
that's pretty good.
There?
Yeah. He's trying to get a tarpon from the beach, and there's a lot of bait fish out there too, a lot of greenbacks, and they've been showing up all along the beach over the last few days. So anyway, there's your Englewood report.
That's really cool to get an update like that. That stuff's awesome.
Yeah.
Wide world of the internet. It's a scary and cool thing all at the same time.
Yeah, but anyway, we're going to be trying to get this putting up when we do these on Facebook so that everybody can add and find out places they want to go. So, you know, check with the Fish and Frank's Facebook thing and you can instant message me or, you know, comment on it. We'll be posting the times.
Nice.
So, anyway.
There's also been some permits scattered out there on some of the reefs. They've been moving around a lot. So you got to kind of check each reef, and permit primarily are really attracted to man-made reefs more so than natural bottom for some reason.
Now, well, people, I don't care where you go. You go down the Everglades and you go to one of these airboat places and you've got the marina there and all the boats and everything and millions of fish.
Millions of fish and birds and raccoons
everything else. And then as soon as you get out in the natural part, there's nothing. It's a ghost town. It's a dead zone.
Yeah.
But people make better stuff.
Yeah.
We do. We make better reefs. We make than nature does. We make better everything. We design it so specifically for the fish. So right. Why wouldn't they want to go on that?
Right.
I mean, people always say, well, it's natural. Well, so is arsenic, hemlock, and anthrax. You know?
MRSA.
Yeah, MRSA. It's all natural. I mean, being natural doesn't mean it's good. It just means it's natural, you know.
Yeah.
I always wonder that about that with people, you know. A man-made reef is really better.
Absolutely. I mean, the Novak reef is a real prime example of that one, how that one was designed and done. It's unbelievable.
Well, the Novak reef, that Palm Island ferry holds a ton of fish in the middle of the water. It holds a lot of fish.
You know, and just certain fish are more attracted to certain things. You know, the natural hard bottom is really good for hogfish. You know, they like the gargonians, you know, the sea fans and seagrasses and stuff like that. Usually your man-made reefs take about anywhere from 5 to 10 years before they develop those things on them. You know, so, you know, certain species, you got to kind of look at it as the man-made
now,
versus natural.
Shrimp and crabs are the best bet. Live shrimp and small crabs are the best bet for those permit.
Absolutely.
And not using a bottom rig for them, really. More
free line on them or a small
squid shot? Yeah, like put a rubber core on, you know, just a light, either an eighth ounce, quarter ounce rubber core, because you just want it to drift down into the fish. You don't want it to shoot by them.
Right.
So don't get real crazy with the weights in there. And when you're out there, try and remember to carry a couple decent spinning rods.
Yeah.
Because your conventionals are going to be better for the bottom fishing, but your spinning rod is what's going to get those permit down there. Because you can cast it out and get it to drift down into the fish.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be casting that bait caster or the conventional with that heavy line on it.
Yeah, and they get to be a little spooky at times, so sometimes you'll see them finning just on the surface, you know, so many yards away from everybody. You know, so it gets to be a little bit difficult and tricky, but the number one thing that people need to do is...
Hang on just a second, Robert. Go ahead and keep going out front.
Number one thing that people need to do with permit is when they hook them, is they need to use a lighter drag on them so that way they can swim away from the reef. But if they put too much pressure on a permit, the first thing they want to do is sound and head right towards the reef, and they'll break you off on a very, very regular basis. So try doing a much lighter drag on them, and you'll have much more success with landing some of those bigger 25 and 30 pound permit. You know, and the other ones that are going on out there, some of the red grouper are doing fairly well at about 20, 25, maybe even 30 miles out. And there's also been quite a few cobia scattered around there, a lot of smaller sharks, some barracudas. And then as you work your way inshore to some of the nearer shore reefs, you know, within, say, like 12 miles out, snapper, 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 phenomenal. I mean, just absolutely incredible with the snapper. Chumming is a real, real helpful thing. You know, a lot of these near shore reefs get beat up a lot, so a lot of the guys need to know that they need to use lighter leader and a much longer leader. And if you chum for a good 5 or 10 minutes before you put any baits down, that helps a lot. You know, you pulling up on a reef and then dropping your anchor down tends to spook those fish and make them a little screwed up. So
by using
the chum, letting everything settle down for about 10 minutes, everything's pretty impressive and gets much, much better.
You know, all right, I'm back.
No problem.
Had to take care of some business with one of our suppliers. You know, even though nothing waits, you know what
no.
I mean? Administrative duties.
Oh, Captain Kale has appeared. Ta-da!
Yay.
Yay. A good time at the fishing.
Almost cleared it.
The fishing class last night.
Yeah.
Robert's now the regular part of the cast of our meetings, so when you come to the meetings, it will be me, Fish and Frank, Robert, and Kale. Captain Kale will be there with Robert and adding a little fresh perspective after I don't know how many meetings, but it's got to be close to hundreds.
Yeah, yeah.
Hundreds of meetings. And
you got a screwdriver?
Do I have a screwdriver?
Yeah, so I can move this mic down or a phone book for me to sit on.
Don't need a screwdriver.
Thank you.
He needs a booster seat.
There we go.
Got the yellow pages handy?
It's okay. All right. Now,
I was just starting to move inshore along the beaches.
Okay. And as Chris Foley commented, a lot of snook right along the beaches. White bucktails working real good. Stay close to land. Don't be fishing out too far from land. Because the closer you are to land is going to work. Okay.
No problem.
Captain Kale, you guys keep going.
Alrighty. Yeah, the snook are piling up on the beaches out there. Well, this is their breeding period, so expect to find them in
this is
sandy
a major
passes.
Spawn this month.
Yeah.
May and June,
yeah, this,
full moon is
this
the
full
huge,
moon.
Huge thing for them.
Expect to find them in sandy passes with high current. But
don't be surprised if you'll come at some of the near shore reefs too.
Yeah,
Novak, no. Trembly.
You don't have to run all the way out there. You know, if you're in PGI, the mouth of Ponce Park, Alligator Creek, Pirate Harbor.
Yeah,
Bird
but we're
Store.
On the beaches right now.
Oh, you're on the beaches, but
plus I don't like to care about snook that much.
No, I don't either.
Not when the season's closed.
No, I don't either. I honestly didn't care about them when the season was open. We tried to go one day and ended up sitting on a sandbar. It was so nice.
Yeah, exactly. So I would prefer to do that. But up and down the beaches, the tarpon are starting to move around a little bit more, but they're going to be a little on the sparse side because of this hill tide for the next couple days. You're going to have fish coming and going, especially in the afternoon. So I think early to midday, you're going to find fish moving up and down the tarpon, moving up and down the beaches. But for the most part, they're going to concentrate in the passes from late morning all the way through until late afternoon, and then they're going to run right back offshore.
And this full moon's another major breed for them. That call to mate is going to pull them out, and they're going to go do their business and come back in.
There's also
it's
been
pretty much figure anybody's going to, you know, the call to mate. You know, I mean, we were just up at Luigi's last night in the fishing club, and you go into the bar, and it seems like, yes, it's spawning season. Okay, I'm sorry.
We can go into that farther, but we'll go another time. This is a G-rated show.
Yes, we're keeping it G-rated, too.
Well, you can still keep it G-rated. I mean, I found that Cubans don't breed in captivity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay, this show is getting good. All right, we're back to the fish.
There's been some bigger bull reds hanging out in the passes in the late evenings that I've been hearing about, both in from Little Gasparilla all the way down to Redfish Pass, mainly in the evenings. A couple guys have hooked a couple during the daytime, but mostly in the evenings throughout the nighttime.
How's that snook bite in Redfish Pass? Anybody been hearing about that?
That
should be amazing. It's
a lot better than a redfish bite in Snook Pass.
and you sat down for what reason? Good God. Okay. There's a historically springtime snook bite in Redfish Pass is absolutely staggering. It's a drift system. It's like the old fashioned, you know, you go up, you get in line, you drift the boats through half ounce sinker with a shrimp bait fish on, and your boat drifts around the corn up inside, and then you got to go around and get in line again. But pretty much every drift you get a snook. I mean, it's just
the main thing to be there or about there is make sure Flipper doesn't show up, and when he does, you actually run your boat up close to the beach and let him go in shallow water, because there are times where Flipper is flat out.
They call him Flipper.
Annoying Flipper, as all get go.
Lightning, eat a snook on sighting.
That's the difference between a tourist and somebody who's lived here a while. Ooh, a dolphin. Ugh, a dolphin.
I don't know. I still enjoy them.
They're beautiful.
I'm not big on, you know, when a dolphin eats one of the fish, that's his job.
Yes.
It is his job. That's what he does.
Now, when they pick him up
and throw him back and forth and play catch with him, I'm a little less thrilled with that. But I got to admit, you know, if I was out there swimming around, nothing else to do, snook would make a great little catch toy, you know.
One of the few animals that kills for fun other than us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, there's a lot of them. Cats. Cats is like the thing, number one. They kill more for fun than humans do. So, now, that whole humans are the only ones kill for fun thing is ridiculous. So, anyway, back to, you know, putting us higher on the evolutionary pedestal. Okay.
Opposing thumbs. That's why.
And anyway,
brains aren't a whole lot.
We were at Redfish Pass talking
about
snook. So you can figure there is snook from Ponarasa all the way up. I'm going to say Esteros, the beaches. I don't think you can go to beach south of Sarasota that's not going to have snook on it right now.
Yeah, right.
And this is the time to be on the beaches. And there's some monsters. I mean, for some reason or another, we're hearing about a lot of 40 to 50-inch snook staying back up here.
And it's been like that all year.
And we're seeing a huge amount of these great big old... And it goes to what I've been saying for years. Those big snook don't spawn well. I mean, they're not even out on the beach. Now they should be out there, and you're finding all the 30-some-odd-inch females and male, little buck males, and the 30-some-inch females out there all doing a spawning dance, and these big 45, 48-inch snook didn't go.
No.
And I've been saying it for years. Let's get that snook limit up to 40 inches where it belongs. No more of the slot limit stuff. You can take your one a day, but it's got to be over 40 inches. Yep. And anybody who tells you little snook eat better than big snook, I can tell you what size fish they catch.
Yeah.
You can also tell that they don't know how to cook, because, I mean, the thick fillet versus a thin fillet, just cut the fillet in half. Big deal.
Butterfly it.
Yeah.
Slice it down the middle, bring it, I mean, on a 44-inch snook, you're going to have a fillet that's literally 3 inches thick. And cut it down to an inch and a half thick, you get two huge fillets. Now you're getting four fillets off of one fish.
Exactly.
You keep one and... you have more meat on the one than you would on three or four of the lower slot.
And imagine
that. So you don't have to take as many fish.
And you're not taking our breeding fish.
Yeah. Let's get that snook limit up where it belongs. Tallahassee, I know you're listening. I know you're there, buddy. So come on, let's make this happen.
Everybody on Facebook, start a campaign and start sending Tallahassee some notes. The
100% through the slot. And so the pass is coming back up.
The passes, the mangrove snapper in there still really, really thick. The tarpon are in there pretty thick, especially in the late afternoons.
The cobia have been thick in the past. Got a lot of tarpon guys complaining about the cobia they're catching.
Yeah, it's a lot of bycatch. You know, it's not something you can actually target, but the bycatch to them is pretty incredible.
Yeah, be it artificials, whether you're using jigs, whether you're using bait, whatever, you know, the cobia bite has been really good out there in the past. and Boca Grande. Captiva doing fair. How's the tarpon in Captiva right now?
Been pretty good. You know, there was a pretty good crab flush through there 2 days ago from what I heard, so there was a lot of tarpon down in that area.
It's the one thing that seems to be missing in Boca Grande is the amount of crabs this year.
Yeah, yeah. Last night I heard that there was a couple crabs starting to flow through in the afternoon with one guy, but he ran in before it really started humping, but he saw quite a few crabs starting to move through.
Yeah, we're going to have to do crabs like we're going to have to do bait fish. Take what you need, not what you want.
Absolutely.
Yep. Absolute golden rule when it comes to bait. We've got to watch our bait.
And when you're dipping those crabs, look for egg-bearing females. And here's another weird thing. While you've got them in your live well, pull them out. And before you put a hook in them, double-check them too, because Josh had one on the last hill tide, and he was scooping and throwing all the egg bearings back, but one developed eggs while it was inside the live well in about 2 hours' time. So, you know, sometimes they'll just all of a sudden pop them out. So keep a close eye out for those and just let them go back in the water.
We are all going to get better. We are all going to do better.
Be better stewards of the sea.
This is the time to start watching what we do even more so than ever.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you guys
just on the inside of the passes, on the intercoastal there, from basically Captiva Pass up to the Placida Trestle along those scattered grass flats, there's been a few bigger trout. Not very good numbers by any stretch, but
you
know, 22-25-inch trout, oddball bycatch of, you know, little sharks, some incidental pompano / permit.
Little grouper, little gags.
Little gag grouper.
And they're actually getting some nice gags inside the intercoastal waterway. I mean, legal-sized gags.
Yeah. Yeah, so you've been hearing, you know, just a lot of good scattered reports. I think, if anything, from this point forward, the intercoastal and the beaches are going to stay hot for the next couple, 3 or 4 months. You know, rainy season's going to start happening. Cleaner, clearer water means cooler water, so higher oxygen level, more bait fish, because a lot of the bait fish are not freshwater tolerant the way our regular predatory fish are, like snook and redfish and tarpon.
Right.
You know, yes, they can live in 100% fresh water, but a lot of people don't realize their food can't.
Exactly.
If you can't breathe, you can't eat, you can't breed, what do you want to stick around for? Time to move on to another spot. You know, and that's what the fish do. They all rely on those three basic instincts in life. So people got to realize that for the next couple months, they need to take the time to drive down. I know it sucks for gas on the boat. I know it sucks for dealing with the boat ramps down that far. But all of that major fishing is basically an imaginary line from the Cape Hayes point across to Burntstor. From that point out towards the Gulf is where your heaviest concentration of fish is going to be. Always your oddballs up inside and a lot closer, but for consistency, that's going to be your next couple months of fishing. You know,
yeah, but it hasn't happened yet.
Unfortunately.
And
no, not yet.
It hasn't happened yet.
But it is. We are starting to see a lot of real big changes, though, in this last week with the redfish and the snook, especially on the west wall and the east wall. They have really started to push a lot harder further south. Like the redfish have been pretty scattered decently from Alligator Creek down. Now they're starting to bunch up tighter around Pirate Harbor and working their way south. Starting to hear of all the snook down there, same way with the tarpon, the ladyfish, the jacks. I mean, the jacks up and down the intercoastal right now have been unbelievable. So it's just, it's in that serious change mode this past week with fish starting to really move down a little bit further. You know, that couple miles makes a huge difference. You're talking about hundreds and hundreds of square miles in the harbor. If a fish moves a half a mile, he might as well move to Fiji. You know, it's going to be hard to find them.
Yeah.
Going up into Lemon Bay, kind of the same thing going on up in there. A lot of small sharks, some mangrove snapper. The trout are hitting out on the edges of the, on the outside edge of the channel, you know, kind of in that 4 to 6 feet of water range. Not good numbers, better quality, but not good numbers.
Lemon Bay has always amazed me.
It's an enigma to me.
Yeah, it's one of those places that's always a safe bet to catch fish.
Right.
But as shallow as it is, you wouldn't think that it holds the fish that it does.
Right.
Now, off of Naples right now, we got a water temp of about 80 degrees. and it's getting a high of 87. And kind of going up and down here a little bit.
Yeah, we're sitting pretty close to that from what I could tell.
Okay. Yeah, we're about 86 degrees out golf temperature, which is pretty warm already. That's pretty warm. That's some serious heat.
Yeah, I wasn't and seeing on the incoming tide in Boca Grande Pass, I was seeing about 82. I wasn't seeing 86 until you start getting up towards the upper harbor and the browner water.
Yeah, I was just looking on fishingfranks.com, checking water temps, and we want to, and the river's only up to 1.8, so it's really not flowing much yet.
No, it's got a slow trickle, maybe.
Maybe a slow trickle, but yeah. I think this push towards the south is about the heat.
Right.
I think it's a temperature-driven movement because there's not any fresh water coming down. The harbor should be much cleaner than it is.
I think it's twofold. I think it's food and water quality. There's not a whole lot left for those fish to eat up here at this end.
And I'm not seeing very many of those little tiny shrimp behind my house at night the way I have been.
No, you're seeing very few.
I think
grass shrimp inside the cast nets.
There could be a quality issue, but I think right now it's a primary temperature issue. So, anyway, so speaking of that temperature, how's Hog Island doing? It's had monster snook on it.
Yeah, I haven't been in there to see what the water temperature's been. My guess would be probably around 85, 86 degrees.
Right. So,
are you going to jump up that far?
Okay, where are you at right now?
We just left the intercoastal, so okay. We got to go to like Bull Turtle.
Frank's boat's faster than ours.
Yeah, okay, did you do Placida or Lemon Bay?
Did Lemon Bay, didn't do the Placida.
Okay, let's do Placida and then work up Gasparilla Sound.
Placida, there's some good mangrove snapper there. Actually had a guy catch a legal hogfish off there the other day.
Wow.
That was pretty cool.
Those are hard to come by offshore, let alone in here.
Yeah, you see little juveniles in there pretty regularly that guys will catch, but to see a decent size hogfish, it was a couple pounds. There's been a few oddball Spanish mackerel, a lot of ladyfish, a lot of really small, small miscellaneous sharks, some tarpon been real good in the evening time. Same way with the snook.
Catfish.
Plenty of catfish.
Plenty of catfish. Keep that in mind for this weekend. Yeah.
Now, Stump Pass and Placida are two places that normally bring winners, make money for people on Saturday night's catfish tournament.
Stingrays and catfish are both real notorious places for them. Same way with Little Gasparilla Pass. Little Gasparilla Pass is usually a real good spot for some bigger stingrays. And then right there in Little Gasparilla Pass, you've got the snapper and a lot of whiting, a lot of big redfish underneath all those docks, both on both sides of the main channel.
And watch that flats in between that channel. High tide, those big redfish
on North Boca.
They're schooling up on those flats during the high tides.
And they're good-sized fish. Those are all like 33 plus.
Yeah, they're nice fish.
And I think the afternoon thunderstorms, evening thunderstorms, are tending to push fish a little bit too. We've getting a lot of lightning at night. A
lot of thunder.
Yeah. A lot of lightning.
A lot of that thunder.
I think that moves. I mean, let's face it. You get, a billion volts of electricity hitting the water not far from you. You're probably going to move a little bit.
It moves the tarpon big time. People don't realize that. Tarpon are really, really sensitive to thunderstorms. It's pretty impressive how they'll leave.
Just checking the weather out there. It's got gust up to 18 miles an hour today.
Really?
Yeah, it's gusting. It's steady at 11, gusting to 18.
Wow.
And we're seeing a lot of these weird, freaky things because we're getting more localized storms. We are a semi-arid climate, and we rely heavily on localized rains.
Right.
So these afternoon storms, even if it's not hitting your house, if it's hitting the harbor, the Gulf, whatever, and it's mostly the lightning going to move them. Getting rain in the harbor really doesn't affect the salinity enough to do anything.
Right. The thunder definitely is it, without a doubt. The rain, the one thing that the rain does do that's kind of nice, though, when you get those good heavy rains, is it does somewhat cool the surface temperature down.
Gets the surface temperature down, adds a lot of oxygen. All that splashing puts a lot of oxygen in the water.
Yeah.
So
it can make a big difference on the flats.
Are the redfish still on the outside of Kaopalu over by Devilfish?
Yes, and there's actually several schools over there right now. From Kaopalau up to Catfish Creek, I've heard of about five different schools.
Are they still hitting the cut bait, or are they doing the
cut bait, shrimp, and then the early morning bite on just soft plastics, just bouncing them along the bottom? There's a ton of snot grass up in there right now too, though, so it's been a real pain in the butt. So the guys are having to rig up weedless.
So if you're going to use a Little John, you got to pretty much use it weedless.
You got to use it weedless. Jig heads, you're going to just, you might as well just stick the hook in your face.
Gee, thanks.
Well, I mean, you're just going to sit there and cuss and make yourself crazy.
Kind of
literally
fatalistic every, for snotgrass.
Every cast. Okay. Every cast, you're going to be making yourself crazy. You know, the most of those redfish have been in about that 5-pound range, but there's two little schools up in there, especially around Whidden Bay, that are running in that 30 to 35-inch range.
Yeah.
And they're like 50 to 100 fish in both schools. They're pretty decent sized fish. There's also been some bigger bull sharks and some lemon sharks cruising around up in those flats, moving in and out with that higher tide, chasing a lot of the mullet and some of those schools of redfish. So if you happen to see a shark, maybe follow him along and see if he pushes up some of those redfish that are staying a little deeper. A lot of snook around those entrances and those little islands too, you know, up there around the tailing flats and the clam fields has had quite a few snook. Some really big stingrays cruising around up inside there, the big southern stingrays, those big 4 and 5 footers have been kind of hanging around up there. As you get closer into the shallower water, you're getting into the little small Atlantic rays, the little, you know, plate size guys. They're all over up in there, and I think that's another reason why some of those sharks are moving up in there.
Sure. That's an easy meal.
Up inside Bull Bay, it's starting to dwindle down just a little bit inside Bull Bay, but the redfish are scattered around all the little pieces of structure, the little islands, some of the little deeper sand holes.
Very few trout. Not much for trout
not
at,
much
all.
At all.
No, the numbers have fallen off.
There should be, there's some scattered sheepheads back by the houseboats and out front, but nothing in big numbers.
No.
And
no. Mainly the entrances seem to be the hot spot for Bull and Turtle Bay both. You know, where that moving water is Gallagher's Cut.
Right.
Bull Bay, both north, you know, both
the Eagle's
entrances.
Nest. Yeah. There's some, wherever you find good moving water, and there's often really good fishing between Bull and Turtle Bay. If you get on those islands and the cut between the islands between Bull and Turtle Bay, Turtle Bay out in the open flat, haven't heard of much.
Not much at all.
Out in front, we still have some snook, a lot of bonnet sharks, stuff like that. And back up, way back up on the inside, there's still some redfish up there, but I don't really know if it's worth the run all the way back there.
Yeah.
Too scattered.
If
you can find them, it's good. But finding them, you know, you got to have a pretty consistent spot.
Absolutely.
But swinging around to Cape Hayes, still going to be one of the best places in the harbor to fish
Definitely.
Find a spot along the bar out there. You got big mangrove snapper.
Big mangrove snapper, marker 5 and Cape Hayes reef are starting to get more consistent numbers of spade fish on them with some oddball Spanish mackerel and cobia. A lot of bonnet heads on it. Some bigger stingrays hanging out around the perimeter of the Cape Hayes reef, and they're always right there along the edge of that drop off on the Gulf side of the Cape Hayes.
A lot of juvenile sharks out there now too on Cape Hayes.
A lot of 18 to 24 inch sharks, and that's this year's hatch.
Yeah, May is the peak month for birth. You know, it starts in March. April's pretty darn good, and May is when probably 70% of your sharks dump their pups. And then you still got a couple of the oddball smaller sharks, and even an occasional bigger shark will pup out in June, but very, very seldom. And the main reason why they do that in that time of year is just the same reason why tarpon show up and the snook show up and the redfish show up is because all the food is out there. You got the small bait fish, you got the thread fins, the white bait, the crabs, the shrimp. All the baby stingrays are being born. That's why all you find is those little sharks move up onto those flats and stuff to chase the baby stingrays and the crabs and little critters. You know, it's just they got to be able to eat, so that's why you'll find a lot of those little guys around. And they tend to stay in little groups, some of them. You know, your bull sharks are usually more isolated, but your black tips tend to be couple, two or three in a little group. Your Atlantic sharp nose, your black nose, they're always in little groups of anywhere from 10 to 30 sharks.
You catch one, you're going to catch
bonnet
a whole
heads
lot
are
more.
The same way. They're always in loose schools of anywhere from 10 to 50.
So how are these schools doing along the sandbar on the west side? I know there's still a few redfish from the radio tower down south towards Cape Hayes.
Yeah.
hearing about a couple big snook here and there along the west side.
Yeah, mainly at the entrances of some of those creeks and any of the little creeks that really you can't see anymore, but look for the moving water. Key thing is all that moving water over there on those walls, whether it's going in or coming out, you got
to
find it.
And I would expect to see more and more redfish and snook coming in there. We're starting to get jacks along the west wall, which is a great sign that there's food there.
Yeah, there's been, believe it or not, whitebait over there.
Yeah.
But coming up around to the Myakka River, you got a slight tarpon thing. Usually late in the day, those tarpon will move up into the mouth of the Myakka River. And as that sun starts slanting down, so after 5 o'clock, you're looking for a Myakka River thing there at the mouth. After dark, maybe up by Eljabeen.
From the mouth all the way up to Eljabeen, really. Yeah. They're scattered all throughout there. Same way as some cobia, a lot of small to moderate-sized sharks.
Yeah.
Triple tailer scattered all the way up the west wall, up to Eljabeen, around some of the crab traps and channel markers. I mean, just kind of a mixed variety of stuff, but they are kind of in little pockets, so you devote about a half hour or so to each little spot and move up just a little bit further, move down just a little bit further, kind of be a little bit more observant. You have to kind of open your eyes a little bit and look for either bird activity or just some small groups of bait fish moving around. That's going to be your key focus point when you move up and down that west wall and into the Myakka a lot.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to head out. I have got a fishing date.
Really?
And I'll let you know.
He is kind of cute.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got a nice bald head like yours.
Yeah, like mine.
Yeah.
That's the attraction.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's all. I'll just keep mine with the little cotton
short,
top.
Fat, and bald.
You're going to try the micro guide?
Yeah, the microwave guide.
Microwave guides, that's right. They cook fast.
Yes.
And cool quickly.
Incredible casting rod. It's something that you put in your hand and you throw it and you say, wow.
Cool.
And
well, I'm looking forward.
It doesn't happen with rods.
We're going to have them in
often.
The store. Let's see, real Reaper rods.
Reaper rods. Yeah.
Yeah, real Reaper charters, Reaper rods. They're going to be here in the store with the new microwave systems. And so as far as we know, Tim's got it kind of down pat because a lot of the microwave guide systems don't really work.
Right.
You have to have really specific placement on those. If they're not perfect, it ain't going to work.
He's got it figured out. Absolutely, the casting distance on those rods impressed me, and
that's what you
said.
That's
saying a lot.
Well, yeah, okay.
I want to get it
in my hand and see what's going to happen. And I'm really looking forward to get out and fishing with Tim for one day and find out how these rods work, because microwave guide systems done properly are exquisite, really nice.
Yeah.
Problem is, most people don't take the time to really work on placement with them, and it's that placement that's everything. If you don't have the right angle from the reel, if you don't have the correct spacing from the reel, everything goes bad.
Very,
very,
very touchy
quickly.
System.
It's really touchy,
and because
I've thrown some that I could have outcasted with a pebble and a slingshot, a rubber band.
I had him spec one out for me, and I don't think I'm going to be able to run backing on my bait caster.
Cast a little too far.
Yeah, it casts right down to the backing, and it's phenomenal. I mean, that blew my mind how far. You throw a Zara Spook on there, and you're fishing in the next zip code.
Well, like I say, go play with Tim.
Yep, we're going to go play.
And when you guys get off the water, come back and we'll do a show and talk about the rods.
Will do.
All right. So anyway, Captain Kale's on his way out, and Robert and I are going to continue. I think we're up to Hog Island.
Tippecanoe and Hog Island.
Okay. What's going on Tippecanoe? That's Tippecanoe? The name we don't say much.
Yeah. It's fun to say, too. It's kind of like Gumba Lumbo.
Yeah. I know. Tippy.
Tippy. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Tippy.
Yeah. Like they were last night.
Yeah.
Oh, that's tipsy.
That was tipsy, yeah. They were all excited. Tim got his rod company off full swing, and they're doing great. The rods are selling great. He's trying to get enough to get us some. The only reason we don't have them yet is because he doesn't have enough. That's good.
Yeah, it's a good problem.
It's a good problem to have. So anyway, Tippy Canoe, what's going on there?
Right there at the mouth of Tippy Canoe, there's been some cobia and a lot of small sharks scattered around out there on the flats in the entrance there. There's also been some scattered redfish. Not great numbers, but a few. You know, it's worth it. If you don't want to travel very far, you know, it's worth taking a look. It's been one day phenomenal, next day terrible, and then the next day good. So just don't have super high expectations, but the water's still pretty clean up in there. It's definitely worth checking out. Same way at the north end there of Myakka Cutoff. All throughout the Myakka Cutoff, especially the north end, seems to be a little bit more fishy than the south end. Scattered redfish, still some, like you were talking about, some of those big snook that just refuse to leave or up inside there hanging out.
Literally monster snook. I mean, these snook are...
This has been one of the banner years for big snook. I mean, everyone talks about the freeze killing everything, and yes, but, you know... These big fish have been here and didn't pass away, and this is the first year, I think, in probably
only
about...
Only the stupid ones. The lazy and the stupid ones died during that freeze, and it wasn't as many as everybody said. It just they happened to get pictures of it for the TV camera.
Right.
And, oh, my God, if it's on a TV camera, it's got to be horrible.
You know, 10 years ago was probably the last time I heard of this many big snook scattered all over the place. I'm not saying that there's a huge population of them, but to see this many snook that we've been seeing this year has been pretty impressive. So I think there's good and bad with the closure of it for that couple of years. You know, it got us to leave some of those fish alone.
It's precisely why I want that slot limit up to 40
Absolutely.
inches.
I agree. We saw it wholeheartedly.
We saw it work. 100% goes through the slot. 100% more fish.
Absolutely.
You know. So anyway,
there's no doubt about it.
Port Charlotte Beach. Been on and off scattered.
Very on and off. You know, mostly at the entrances of them.
It's not worth paying to park there right now.
No.
I mean, you know, good place to leave from a boat, but if you're going to go fishing, you got several free piers to fish that are doing equally as well. Bayshore, Gilcrest. Now, jumping a little bit, Darren Piper sent me a note here on Facebook. Lashley Pier, they've got spade fish down there, some smaller mangrove snappers, and some rays, some stingrays.
Let's move right up into that area from the 41 Bridge because the beach complex pretty much meh.
Well, thanks, Darren. Interesting about the stingrays there. Stingray tournament Saturday night, so, you know, might be a decent shot.
Might be worth trying, absolutely. And then there's always some pretty good catfish caught off of there without a shadow of a doubt.
I would, but I'm still going to go with Placida if I'm looking for bigger cats and bigger rays.
Absolutely.
And if you drive around the Stump Pass, get all the way down right there in the pass, you can stand on the beach there and catch some monster catfish right there. Some really good catfish there in Stump Pass right now.
Absolutely.
But Lashley, great place to start. I mean, if you get there right about dark is the best time to fish there at Lashley, just as it's getting dark.
Yeah, that's been one of the most activities been going on. Same way at the 41 Bridge. It's been that 5 o'clock till about 7 o'clock in the morning has been pretty good. And then that 7 o'clock at night until about 9 o'clock at night been pretty decent.
Because I think we could sum up the Port Charlotte canals with some snappers near the mouth, a few big snook here and there. Mm-hmm.
A few sand brim.
Yeah, the sand brim are doing pretty fair.
You know, but that's really about it that I've heard of. I mean, even the black drum kind of fizzled out a little bit. They started to build a little bit and then just done.
But coming up to the Peace River, there's been quite a few fish in and between 41 and I-75. Mm-hmm. As far as Spanish mackerel goes, they're way up here.
That's the only ones I'm hearing about.
Yeah.
And any consistency. The rest are just like, I caught one.
Yeah, black drum, you get one here, one there. There's a few tarpon through there. Redfish, actually not doing bad. There's a couple of big docks on the north side of that stretch between 41 and 75.
Right.
And they've got some decent redfish on them. Yeah. And working that northern shoreline, some nice redfish.
Been some
there.
Juvenile tarpon over there, too. You know, little, you know, 10 to 25 pounders scattered out there on those flats and underneath some of those docks, too, because a couple of guys fishing for the reds and the snook underneath them. Been jumping a couple small tarpon.
That's a lot of fun over there.
Absolutely.
And it's nice, it's easy. You can if you leave from Lashley, you literally got 2 minutes to go before you're fishing.
Exactly.
So heading up around up through the Northern Peace River from I-75 on up to the Navigator, you got a lot of big gar up there. I mean, there's a ton of big gar
and they're fun. And they're an underrated fish. You know, they're annoying sometimes, but they're way underrated as far as their fighting
ability. I used to make
a
tremendous amount of money off of them because I had so many customers that liked traveling up the river, and I was one of the few captains who did that. And we would go up there and catch 3-4 foot plus gars, and they would have a ball with that. And on light rods, they're a lot of fun. Tricky, yeah. tricky to get.
Absolutely.
But I would do a few guys fly fishing up there for the gar. And if you fly fishing, whenever you want a great experience, take a regular hook, about a number two, number one hook, and get some red ribbon, just like you tie on your Christmas packages, a half inch, 3/4 inch wide. Get it over the hook, tie it on, and then towards the back, you want it about 6 inches long, 5 inches long. But I'm going to shred with a razor blade the last 2-3 inches of that ribbon. And it really works good. It's a great fly for gar.
Yeah, and you'll hook an incidental tarpon every now and then doing that too up there.
Oh, yeah. So,
it's just a fun, underrated fish. You know, it's in... While you're up there, you can dead bait it, and your bycatch is going to be shark, tarpon, because there's been a lot of little juvenile bull sharks up to like 5 foot up in there. A few oddball black tips, the occasional tarpon, obviously.
One of our guys come in, I forgot all about that. He's catching a ton of black tips just out from Harbor Heights.
Right.
A lot of small sharks up there. I forgot all about that. Good thing you brought it up.
A lot of catfish, too. Not a lot of giants, but there's been some pretty quality sail cats up in there.
For quality sail cats, I'm going to go more down by I-75, put a chum bag out, and you'll find that bigger catfish, but you're going to have to chum them up. There's so many small ones. Get a good fish gripper and settle in for a lot of fish and, you know, a lot of culling.
Yeah, same way up there culling. Around the Shell Creek, too, from the trestle up to the dam itself. There's... Mm. A ton of catfish up in there, and you're going to weed through them the same way.
All right. Now, going into PGI canals, still a few jacks, not a lot.
Right.
A lot of small tarpon. Got some snook near the mouth, some big snook there. Not a lot of small ones right now.
Yeah, not a lot of small ones. The little ones seem to have left. Some of the lights still have some snook on them. Black drum has slowed down a lot of the tarpon, especially in the main canals like Bass Inlet, Colony Point. Those are some of the key spots for them. Haven't heard much about redfish or mangrove snapper, just the incidental little guys, you know. But also at the entrances, there's been some small sharks and a few oddball cobia right there around Colony Point and Bass Inlet.
There you go.
A lot of small stingrays, and then there's also groups of cownose rays moving up and down that bar between Fisherman's Village and Ponce.
And tarpon about... 8 o'clock in the morning, it's still a really good place. If you're leaving from PGI or Port Charlotte and you're looking for tarpon and you're getting that, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning start, get over towards Fisherman's Village and look between Fisherman's Village and Colony Point. Just basically get over there, shut the boat down, and sit and look. And look for a roller. Because it's the only, you know, driving around is not going to help you. Find a spot, sit down, and just...
Right.
Look.
Sit still and be really patient.
Be a hole in the water.
They're not rolling a lot, but all you have to do is see one or two and then get right in that vicinity because there's usually several with them.
But you're going to need electric motor because if you sit there all shut down and you fire the gas engine, that's going to take a while for anything to happen again. If you don't have a trolling motor, don't shut your motor off. Leave the motor idle.
Right.
And it's better to have a consistent noise than dead quiet, boom. You know,
exactly.
It's better for the motor to sit there and idle and watch. It's less disruptive to the fish.
Absolutely.
So if you have electric motor, shut down your outboard, get quiet like a hole in the water. If you have an outboard, go to neutral and leave the motor running because they will get used to the sound of that motor. Not good when you throw it in gear, but just engage it dead slow idle to move towards the fish. As soon as you pound that throttle, they're all gone.
Absolutely.
But anyway, heading around the skating rink over by the mouth, you know, and Mangrove Point, Whorehouse Point, Mangrove Point, skating rink.
Lots of scattered rays all over on that flat there. So the wade fishermen are having to be real careful because most of them are the smaller size rays. There's been some redfish on the outside there in some of those little troughs or dimples, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
A few redfish and snook up along the bushes. But it's been relatively quiet along there. You know, it's not anything major going on. There's been a few tarpon right off the point there, a horror point, but incidental, just completely incidental.
We're going down the east side. You guys were talking about a little bit earlier. A lot of redfish and snook, spotty on the snook, but a lot of redfish.
A lot of redfish.
South on the east side, getting closer to Pirate Harbor's definitely been better.
Yeah, all those little islands and little bays that are like within a mile of Pirate Harbor have been really good for, you know, legal size redfish, not giants, but like 5 pounders. A few big snooks scattered in there. Out on the bar, there's been a lot of small sharks, a few cobia cruising around. There's even been some tarpon hanging out right on the edge of the drop off of the bar in that 3 to 5 feet of water area. Ladyfish, jacks, Spanish mackerel occasionally. Kind of a mixed bag of stuff on the just on the outside edge of the bar.
Right. Now, heading down towards Two Pines, about the same scenario, a lot of redfish, some tarpon on the outside, exactly as you were just talking about.
Right.
But going over to Boquilla Jug Creek, we've got a lot of bait fish over there right now.
A lot of bait fish.
And which is bringing in a lot of small grouper. We've got some sennets, which are actually... they're barracuda basically, yeah. But it's
they don't top over 2 feet long.
Yeah,
they're
those
usually small guys.
18-20 inch barracudas are actually sennets, but first cousin to the actual barracuda that we think of. And there's quite a few of those in the flats. Just throw a Silver Johnson Sprite, and it's the easiest way to catch them.
Absolutely.
And paddle tail jigs for the small grouper. You got a couple of trout here and there, but nothing spectacular.
Yeah. They're quality, but they're not quantity by any stretch.
Yeah, I'm not even going with quality. I'm just going with a few. I mean, you can have your opinion is quality. My opinion is there's a few. Working our way down on the inside of that, outside of Pine Island, there's a ton of redfish along them islands, rat and tat, and all the way down until you get down towards St. James City. It's some of the best red fishing around right now.
Yeah, it's incredible, really.
And if you're coming back up on the Matt Lachey
side,
and that
water's as clear as you're going to see.
That's one of the problems.
Clear.
You got to, I mean, stick to 15-20 pound test fluorocarbon.
Long cast.
Long cast. That you're going to want 7.5-8 foot rods, because by the time you see them, it's too late.
Right.
You've got to really keep your eyes open and be up in the boat, and then when you go to fish, get down in the boat level and make those mega casts to get to them. Chunks of ladyfish working pretty good, shrimp, whitebait, you know, kind of pick your poison, but I would have at least two types of bait out to see which one they're going for that day.
Yeah, the frozen shrimp's been starting to pick up a little bit for a lot of those redfish, too.
Yeah, I love frozen shrimp because it stinks. A lot of times I've been out not catching redfish, take the live shrimp, the beautiful ones I have, throw them on a live oak, let them get a little red, and stick them on a hook and throw them out and catch redfish with it.
Absolutely.
And it would be a good thing right now with the water getting warmer as it is. But swinging around up by Matt Lachey, Ponarasa, there's a ton of snook around Ponarasa.
Yeah, all those docks are loaded with some really big fish.
Almost tarpon. There's a few here and there, but it's not huge numbers from what we're hearing. But up in Matt Lachey, you got better chance on your tarpon. Nighttime, the bridge is lighting up with tarpon. We're getting more and more reports of good tarpon fishing late in the day, overnight.
Right.
Overnight fishing there has been the best. Snook and tarpon,
small sharks, moderate-sized sharks, some bigger stingrays. Obviously, a lot of catfish down in there too. There's also been during the daytime they've actually started picking up a few spade fish down there at Matt Lachey.
Yeah, I mean it's weird. We got spade fish all the way up here by Lashley Park.
Yeah, it's Matt Lachey's, they just kind of showed up, and I mean we had a couple trickle in where we heard about them a couple weeks ago, but then just this last 10 days or so, getting a lot of mixed reports of assorted sizes of them.
So, what and about the reefs around Alligator Creek, Capes?
Spadefish, without a shadow of a doubt, is probably one of the predominant ones. A lot of cobia scattered on them, small sharks, some big stingrays, some jewfish, Goliath grouper still hanging out on them. There's been a lot of triple tail scattered throughout the entire harbor. You know, they are more in the open areas, but always around some kind of structure.
Yeah.
Any of the channel markers.
One of your best, or one of your triple tail came from under a bird. Literally, a dead bird floating on the water had a triple tail under it.
Yep.
I mean, and one of the largest triple tail I've caught, close to 30 inches, was underneath a snack-sized potato chip bag.
That was with your father, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that picture.
And, you know, I used to go out and just target nothing but massive triple tail. And some of the biggest ones I've ever seen have been under the tiniest object. I mean,
yeah, the most
really
obscure stuff that you would think of.
Only covering their eyes and their nose. And
right. You can't see me.
Yeah, their lips are sticking out one side, and they've got, you know, 26 inches of body and tail stuck out the other side. But, you know, I can't see you. You can't see me.
Right.
You
know? So look for the crab traps, coconuts, channel markers, potato wrappers.
Anything laying on the water and on a bright, sunny, calm day will probably have a triple tail hanging out underneath it. For some reason, they like to hide in there, but they're like a 2-year-old playing hide and seek. They cover your eyes and you've disappeared.
Yeah.
And that's the way they do it. But
you know what always amazes me too about triple tail is when they want to move from one place to another, they're lazy. They like to lay on their side and just kind of slowly paddle themselves, drifting along with the current. I mean, I've seen so many different triple tail nighttime off of Placida Pier and Eljo Bean. See them just come drifting by. It's like, what is that, a little clump of grass or what is that? And then you realize it's triple tail.
It could be a camouflage thing because, yeah. I mean, just laying there drifting along in the water is a good way not to be eaten.
Yeah, maybe to an osprey it looks too wide to grab or...
Yeah, now that would be a real, you know, from predatory birds, even when they're smaller, they create a much bigger presence in the water. And I think even from fish laying underneath, they look like a dead fish floating along.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it with Dwayne
out there. I think
it's just a survival. I don't know, 5-6 years ago, we had like 6 triple tail come just floating by us in a matter of 10 minutes while we were up in by the 20-foot hole. And every one of them were laying on their side just lollygagging, just drifting by. It's just a bizarre thing to see, you know. It's so unusual for a fish.
let's get hardcore sharks, catfish, and stingrays.
All right,
I'm gonna pick
let's pick shark. Where would you go
for sharks? I'm not big on being right out by the pass. I'm gonna come out in front of Bull Bay or maybe even Turtle Bay. I'm picking about 6 feet of water because I want to get them when they're going into the shallow. So if you can get out there about 5 o'clock, you would sign out there at 3:30, gives you an hour and a half to get out there, you know, 3:30, 4:30, yeah, an hour and a half, you know, and somewhere around there. Now, if you don't get started until later, I'm actually going to move a little bit deeper because those sharks are going to come up. Now, I'm going to stay in about 6 feet of water right off of Bull Bay or Turtle Bay, get my chum bags out, drop a couple big baits on the bottom, a couple of baits. I'm going to balloon one out. And about 4 feet below the balloon. Now, I want to hard tie that balloon. I don't want it to break off. I want that balloon hard tied to the line, not because of the breakaway, illegal or illegal. I want it to use it as a bobber. So I don't want it coming off the line. So hard tie it so your leader is hanging with that bait down below it. Because a lot of these fish swim. They're going to be a little bit closer.
And suspended in the water column.
Suspended. That's what I was looking for. So I'm going to be about 6 feet of water off of Bull Bay. Now, I would say probably my next best bet would be outside by Johnson Shoals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on the wind.
Yeah, yeah, the wind's going to play a big role in it.
So where's your...
If I'm going to pick two spots, I'll agree with you on the Johnson Shoals one, but my first spot would be honestly over between Pirate Harbor and just south of Burnt Store, anywhere in that same foot range, you know, 6-7 feet of water. Probably, if it were me personally, I'd probably be more apt to stay right there just south of Burnt Store in about 6 to 8 feet of water.
So you're going closer to Two Pines, about a third of the way down to Two Pines, out?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. That'd be about right. About a mile south of Burnt Store.
So you're getting close to Two Pines, kind of in that funnel area coming out of the Matt Lachey.
Yeah, you got water moving in from Matt Lachey. You get the water moving into the pass and hitting up the east wall, so you get a lot of water flow through there. And it's got that weird bottom that's sometimes sandy, sometimes gravelly, sometimes a little shelly. It kind of changes a little bit, but it always stays pretty hard there.
Keeps your bait from sinking in the muck.
It's not silty at all. You know, and the variety of sharks that I've caught there over the years or have seen there over the years is astounding. I mean, literally giant black tips, you know, as big as 6 feet. Bull sharks, hammerheads, lemon sharks.
So
I mean, the variety of stuff.
With the tournament, we have a 54-inch size minimum on the shark. So even if it's a black tip and you're allowed to bring it in smaller, it has to be 54 inches to enter it in the tournament.
Correct.
And now for catfish, I'm going to call Stump Pass, Placida, Eljabine, and the Rim Canal in PGI.
I agree with all that. Absolutely. Another spot where I've caught quite a few bigger catfish also is the both canals on either side of the golf course there on the backside of Boca Grande.
Yeah, that would be a good spot. You know, forgot about that.
And the other incidental catches right there is always the possibility of a big stingray, always a possibility of a shark too, because they, you know, they move up there. The only drawback is most of the sharks that I've experienced up in there that are bigger have always been lemon sharks.
Right. That's, you know, the problem with being rarely up inside for a big shark. It's almost always going to be a lemon.
Right.
And you can tell the difference between a lemon and a bull shark, and it has nothing to do with the color. A lemon shark
tastes funny?
Yes, they're sour. But a lemon shark has the dorsal fin just like a bull shark, but the caudal fin, or the fin right by the tail, is almost identical in size. I mean, yes, when you look at them, you're going to think they're the same size. Yeah. Bull shark, the dorsal fin is huge. The little fin right by the tail is much, much smaller, easily identifiable between the two. And those are the two most likely ones you're going to get inside, as both those sharks do not have to move. They can both lay still on the bottom like a giant catfish. They don't have to do the normal shark thing and always move. Yep. They can both lay flat on the bottom. That's why you find both of those in that 2-3 feet of water, because they're not required to move all the time. They can just lay still.
As long as there's enough oxygen around, they can sit still.
So, anyway,
what about your choice of stingrays?
That's where I was going. I'm going to call Boquilla. Not sure. Kale's, he's big on the reef for big stingrays. I'm not sure about that one.
It's too inconsistent.
Yeah.
I mean, when they're there, it's holy crap, it's on. But it's just like when you're out there tarpon fishing, there's spots you go to and you will catch big stingrays while you're tarpon fishing. Then you won't see a stingray in that spot for the next 6 months.
I think I would go with Jug Creek Shoals, and then I'm going to go on the intercoastal as you're from Boca Grande Pass heading south. I would go down just towards the end of
Pelican Bay.
Right where, right the back, the lower end of Pelican Bay there.
That's what I was going to say for my first pick.
Yeah, that to me would be a great spot for big stingrays.
Both entrances, the north and the south entrance, because that north entrance has a really good drop off on that sandbar
right
there at that entrance. That buckets down real hard. I mean, it goes from like a foot of water to like 4 feet of water relatively quickly.
Right.
And the same way at the south entrance, but the south entrance is a little bit more subtle, but it's got some phenomenal grass around that whole area, all the way up to like 8 feet of water. There's just some beautiful, beautiful grass.
And now keep in mind, when you're shark fishing, you're just as liable to catch stingrays. If you're stingray fishing, you're liable to catch sharks, catfish on anything. But if I was going to go out for catfish, Eljabine, I'd want to use Spanish sardines there. They really seem to love them. Spanish sardines would be my first pick.
You're going
to
weed through a lot of little ones, but you will catch a moose eventually.
You know, it's just going through them. Make sure you got a fish gripper, because you're going to be handling 20, 30, 40, 50 catfish to get to the one you want.
Right.
And chumming for catfish works great.
Absolutely.
I mean, I would definitely chum for the catfish. And remember, this is likely to be a $1,000 fish. Now, it could be lower than that. It could be much higher than that. But average on the catfish, about $1,000. And so that's a lot of money for a $30 entry fee.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing that you've talked about, and I'm in agreeance 1,000%, is getting out there and targeting the sharks for the first 4 hours. Like from 5 o'clock until 10 o'clock, I'm going to be shark fishing.
And then I'm going looking for catfish.
Then I'm going to my catfish and stingray spots.
And now I go back about 3 o'clock in the morning, get set back up for sharks. I'm bringing my chum in by 10:30. 11 at the latest. I'm going to bring all my chum up, put it all in buckets, get it all saved up so I've got it, whatever's left, for use after 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
And I'm going to pack up. I'm going to head out. I'm going to catch catfish from, 10:30 till 3 in the morning. That's all about catfish for me.
Right.
Because that's, they'll hit all night. They don't have that pause that the sharks will. You can catch sharks from 10:30 to 3, but it's much less. Right. For some reason or other, they do a big heavy feed, then they kind of lay up, and then lunchtime kicks back in around 3 in the morning again.
Right. The only thing I would do differently is from that 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning until, say, 6:37, is I would probably be more apt to drift because usually the winds are super, super calm, and with this hill tide going on right now, it's going to be a very slow-moving tide until 10, 11 o'clock before it turns again. So I'm going to try to set up a drift if it's calm enough. If I'm able to get it just a good, slow, easy-going drift, whether I use a windsock or a 5-gallon bucket off the side just to slow me down quite a bit, I'm going to try to cover a little bit of territory, staying in like that 6 feet of water area.
And go looking for the shark rather than having them wait for them to find you.
Correct.
You're going to go looking
I'm
for the
shark. I'm still going to have my chum bag out. I'm going to still have multiple baits out. I'm going to just use a little bit lighter sinker so it's not going to get hung up right on the bottom. So I've got multiple poles scattered in the water column. But I want to try to cover a little bit of ground. You know, and if I've got a couple fresh live baits going out there, like if I'm lucky enough to catch a jack or a fresh live ladyfish or a mullet and throw it out there and let them swim around for a little bit just to get some, you know, movement in the water and some excitement going, that would be about the only thing I would probably do a little different for that early, early morning bite. You know, that would probably excite me a little bit more so. You know, it's just something a little different. Not a lot of guys do it. It's super, super successful on the West Coast. You know, California for fishing for Makos and Blues. Those guys never anchor. They always drift.
Yeah, but it's still a different type of shark.
Absolutely.
You know, the sharks that we have here are completely different. Not a big drift person with sharks, but it's very effective, especially when you get out closer to the pass.
Right.
I'm not big on in the harbor because I want to be set up, anchored, got my loop on there, got my floats on my line, and I just feel I do better concentrating my chum and letting them find the chum and coming to me. But after 10 o'clock, I'm going to call the drift a good thing. Before 10,
I'm going to be anchored up 100%.
I'm going to be anchored up chumming before 10 o'clock.
Agreed.
And after 10, you can do the drift. But I'm still going to say, you know, if you got three people on the boat, you can bring in three catfish, three stingrays, and two sharks.
Yep.
Or, you know, four people in the boat, and you can show your fish between each other. Right. If one person in the boat catches, you know, three big stingrays or three stingrays, bring them in. And now, keep the first stingray you catch for bait or for the tournament until you get the second stingray. Then the smallest one can go out for bait. But we've had guys use stingrays for bait that would have won in the tournament.
Absolutely.
I've seen as small as 26 inches win money in this tournament. So don't think you got to have a 4-footer. It might take, you know, 30 inches to win or 35 or 45 inches to win, but you don't know that.
Same way with the catfish. I mean, we've seen half-pound catfish take fourth place.
Actually, I've seen a 3-ounce catfish take fourth place. Not because there wasn't many fish, but just nobody weighed them in. They said, they weren't big enough, and they didn't bother.
Right.
So this is your one shot. Get that catfish and do your shark fish until 10:30, then go out and hardcore the catfish. If you're in Bunker and Pass, you can swing right around to the canals. You can go down towards Placida, Devilfish, get in a little shallower water, find them catfish. And, you know, if you're up on the major end of the harbor, usually all it takes, the harbor, even the deep holes in the harbor are full of catfish.
Yeah, the 20-foot holes got all that, and your bycatch is going to be stingrays.
I would, I definitely have some spinning rods with me to fish for those catfish. It's easier. It's quicker.
Much easier.
But don't be. This is a tournament, so don't be using the light line stuff.
No.
And
use
get
your
them up.
Gear.
You're not playing with these catfish. This is a money fish. So, you know, use a little bit heavier line. You know, you don't want to have that beautiful 6-pound catfish show up next to the boat. All of a sudden he's gone because the line snapped or the leader snapped. They're not leader shy. If you're using 15-pound test braid, put a 40-pound. I put 40-pound test leader on it. They're not
Absolutely.
Leader shy.
No, not at
Go,
all.
Don't forget all this 10, 20, you know, 15, 20-pound test leader stuff. Get up into that 40-pound
test
leader. Yeah,
you're not finesse fishing.
No, this is, you know, grip it and rip it. So make sure you're using heavy leaders, even on the catfish. Don't try and finesse anything. This isn't a regular day of fishing. At 3:30, you're going to have paid your money. You're going to sign out. We write your name in there, and then you sign, and then you're off fishing. So use tackle.
Absolutely.
This
you shouldn't be using less than tarpon tackle out there.
Well, I use my regular spinning rods, but I've got 20-pound test braid on it, 40-pound leader.
Well, that's true.
You know, and
but I mean, so often I've incidental caught cobia, incidental hooked big stingrays. You know, so I'd rather bring a big gun.
One last thing. Did you talk about Tom Adams Bridge?
No, we did skip that. I apologize.
Okay, one last thing. What's happening to Tom Adams? That should be a good catfish pier.
I would think it would be, too.
I never really thought about it, but I'd chum the heck out of it.
In a skinny minute.
I think that might be a great place for the catfish there.
I mean, they catch them there fairly regularly. It's one of those things you overlook, I guess.
Yeah, I just didn't think about it till just now. What else is sitting there besides some catfish?
There's been a lot of tarpon in the evening of assorted sizes, from little 10-pounders up to 100-pounders between the Tom Adams and the actual main bridge.
And the main bridge is where those tarpon are hanging out. Right. The snook's hanging out there. You've got a lot of fish on that bridge there, Tom Adams Bridge itself. The pier is doing okay, but if you can get there by boat and fish those bridge abutments and pilings, you're going to have a great time.
Yeah,
a lot of nice fish. A
lot of sugar trout, some nice whiting, few oddball Spanish mackerel. I've heard of a couple bluefish there in the last couple days. Other than that, it's been about it. It's mainly been the snook and the tarpon. Well, and there's also been quite a few small sharks.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think we've kind of hodgepodged this thing to death enough. So,
it jumped a little bit, but it's all good.
Any last notes? Tournament, it's $30 to get in, $28.04 plus sales tax. And there's going to be, you can pay your money anytime between now and then, and you can actually pay and sign up and sign out at the same time if you come after 3:30. If you pay your money before 3:30, you do have to come back at 3:30 or after and sign out. If you don't have your signature next to where we put your name, I don't care what you say, you're not getting paid.
Right.
Without a sign out, that puts you in the tournament. Paying your money does not get you in the tournament. You have to pay your money, then sign out. And absolutely, sign out start at 3:30. So
nobody leaves any earlier than that. You can stand in line all you want out front, but nobody leaves any earlier than 3:30 to sign out to go fishing.
So anyway, what you want to do, get out and enjoy the night. This is the last for the foreseeable future. I've learned over years, never say never. But for the foreseeable future, I do not see this tournament coming back as it is now. It could come back in different forms, but the shark part of this is gone for now and for the foreseeable future. So get into it. Be a part of history. This is 29 years and, 60-some tournaments. I mean, and we were doing two a year from 86 or 87 through 2008. So there's a lot of
tournaments here.
So anyway, be a part of history and fish this one last one. And the researcher guys are coming. I don't know if they're going to be doing data or not, but we're going to have them here. Whether they do or not, the research is over, and that is the primary reason we're stopping the shark tournament. And just to have a kill tournament that doesn't benefit the sharks is not in good form. Now, this one we're doing strictly to one last big hurrah. The research ended this over the course of the year, and we're not going to just stop the tournament and say, no, it's gone. This is your last shot. Yeah. Too many people have done this for too many decades, and we want you to have one last shot at it. This is the first time we're doing the tournament for just our customers, the people who have fished it for years. They've helped with research. They've gone above and beyond their way to do all the right thing, and so this is their swan song.
Absolutely. So,
anyway, and speaking of swan songs, this is mine. This is Fish and Frank, and that's Robert over in the chair across from me. And I guess that wraps it up.
Yeah.
We'll see you Saturday for the tournament.
Absolutely.